The following podcast is a production of Institutional Real Estate Incorporated. Before beginning our program, we would like to invite you to sign up for a free trial subscription to one of our publications at irei.com. Whether you are interested in real estate, infrastructure, or real assets in general, IREI has a publication to suit your needs. Select Publications on the main menu to choose a publication. Interested in more than one? Sign up for them all.
Welcome to Report from Europe. This is Mike Consul. On the phone with me is Marek Hanzel, editor of Institutional Real Estate Europe. Marek, welcome back.
Yeah. Hi, Mike. Yeah. Good to speak to you as always.
Since we last spoke last month, there has been some stuff coming down in the UK where you are stationed. And turns out now we've got a new prime minister. Boris Johnson has taken over to the chagrin of many and to the celebration of others. And this whole Brexit uncertainty, I mean, he has promised, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe Boris Johnson said with or without Brexit, we're out of the Eurozone. And that has got some people shaken up. So when it comes to real estate, has the real estate market and the United Kingdom been reacting to all the Brexit uncertainty or to the installation of Boris Johnson as new prime minister? Have you seen the repercussions in the real estate market yet?
I think it's a bit, I mean, as you say, Mike, he's a divisive figure and has sort of said that the UK will be leaving on the 31st of October, deal or no deal, leaving the European Union. It's a bit too early to gauge reaction, I think, to his particular words and his actions so far. But what we do know is that the uncertainty that's been brewing ever since the referendum in 2016. It's kind of come to a head now, and it's definitely affected transactions in the UK. There was a report from I think it's out earlier this month from Real Capital Analytics. They had a Europe Capital Trends report for the second quarter for Q2, and they have calculated that property investment transactions in the UK were down by 31% in the first half of 2019.
Wow.
So they were down to about 23.4 billion euros. I guess to put it in some sort of context, there's been a slowdown in Europe generally, but the overall drop in Europe was, this is again according to Real Capital Analytics, was about 15% in deal volume between January and June, actually. So that's So that's a 15% drop, but in the UK it was a 31% drop, so significant. So I think you know, we have discussed Brexit before, haven't we, Mike? And I think one of the things we sort of talked about was that the sort of mid-tier institutional investors who can't afford to sort of who can't afford to sort of take a punt, if you like, and risk a big investment in London have perhaps scaled back and quite worried about what's happening. So that, yeah, there's definitely been, the uncertainty has definitely affected investment transactions. So that's what we know so far. We also know that sentiment is still poor when it comes to the UK. So Brickvest, the online property commercial property platform, they sort of capture the views of about 6,000 professional real estate investors, and according to their latest sort of data, only 27% of professionals from their sort of that pool of people they contact, only 27% of them view the UK as their preferred market, which is a 4% fall in the past 12 months, but that's been gradually falling down and down. So appetite for the UK market from German investors fell to 14%. In France, it slipped to 10%. So everything's sort of dropping. There's a lot of negativity and sentiment's dropping, transactions are dropping. And this is all tied in with the uncertainty of a Brexit. So it's not even, it's gone beyond sort of whether Brexit's a good thing or a bad thing at the moment. It's just, we just don't know what's going on. So there's no point investing money because we just don't know what's going to happen. So
you're kind of putting things on ice for a while, it sounds like.
Yeah.
What about approval rate? I mean, we talk about an approval rating here in the United States for our presidents. Does the same thing happen in the UK where? So tell me, what's the approval rating right now for Boris Johnson?
Good question. I haven't seen anything recently on that, but during the campaign, so Boris Johnson, for any listeners who don't know, is from the Conservative Party, and the Conservatives had a leadership election, which is what led to Boris Johnson taking over from Theresa May. During that, there were a lot of polls conducted with Conservative voters and floating voters and the general public, and he came out quite favorably amongst those. I mean, he's one of those, I did talk about him being a divisive figure, but he seems to strike a chord with quite a few people, and I think he's been quite careful about how he's built his career. And he's always sort of happy-go-lucky, and he's got this sort of strange hairstyle, and he's a bit on the fringe. He seems to elicit a lot of positive feelings from some voters. So he's definitely got higher approval ratings than, for example, the opposition leader Jeremy Corbyn. But I haven't seen anything recently. I'd have to sort of dig something out, Mike. He was far and away the leading Conservative candidate among the public. So.
Well, and we know he's popular with President Trump, maybe based on the hair color and style somewhat, but they do like each other, or at least, Trump pretends to like him. And he has said, Trump has said that they're going to meet. And he says, we'll strike a trade deal with Britain that's going to be much better than the European Union. You're not going to believe how good this is. The usual kind of Trump bluster. Is there any confidence that the United States and UK will strike some kind of major trade deal that's going to make this a soft landing for the UK economy once it leaves the European Union?
Good question. Good question, Mike. I think it kind of. A bit like in the States and elsewhere, it kind of depends which newspapers and journals you read and magazines you read. I mean, some from center right wing are quite positive about a US British trade deal. Other titles, other journalists and commentators are sort of quite skeptical and think it would take a lot longer than some people in the Trump administration have sort of signaled. Looking at it on the surface and taking people's comments at face value, from reading that sort of stuff and hearing what we've heard, then you'd have to say that it looks positive. But as we all know, these things can get very complicated with trade deals. I think one of the major complications with that is still whether the UK leaves with a deal or without a deal. So if there is a deal, and there's not much time left to sort of renegotiate the deal that Theresa May's team came up with. But if there is a renegotiation and a deal is agreed, then there will no doubt be some caveats and some issues there with being able to negotiate trade deals. But there'll be a temporary transitionary period, I imagine, as there was in the original agreement as it stands now, which will prevent the UK from being able to really agree any trade deals, because it will still be tied in with the EU as it negotiates its own trade deals with the EU and tries to leave amicably. So for all that talk, it may not happen if there is a deal. I guess if there's a no deal break, then the UK would look to accelerate talks as quickly as possible. So in that scenario, it may be more plausible, but I don't have any special insight apart from what we've all read, Mike. So,
well, what about, is Boris Johnson going to come up with a plan before that he's going to present to Parliament and hopefully get approved. Yeah. Is that the is a plan coming from him?
Yeah. So his election campaign to become prime minister, conservative leader, his campaign was based on, we are leaving on the 31st of October. However, I'm confident that I can negotiate a deal. And he actually wrote to Donald Tusk, the European Council president, this week, saying that he wants to open up negotiations again. He's waited a bit before doing so since he got into power. And he basically wants the backstop, the backstop dropped out of the agreement. So the backstop is the sort of insurance policy whereby if a deal isn't agreed between the EU and the UK during this transitional period, which is part of the original withdrawal agreement, then in order to avoid a hard border between Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, there would be a backstop, which means the UK would still be closely tied to the European Union Customs Union, and Northern Ireland would effectively stay aligned to lots of the rules within the EU's single market. So it would basically mean that it would be a continuation of the UK and the North and being very, very closely tied to the EU in effect. And they want to get rid of that because that's sort of against the spirit of Brexit, if you like, or the whole idea of cutting ties with Europe eventually. And they've come back today, I think, or late yesterday, saying that the agreement's not up for negotiation. So it leaves all this uncertainty still back up in the air. I mean, some people are saying it's a kind of like a game of chicken with the EU now, and that it's the thing who's going to blink first, because a no-deal Brexit, won't benefit the EU either. And obviously all the people who export into goods into the UK and services. So we're trying to see, waiting to see who's going to blink first. That's kind of the thinking.
Well, if there's no deal, let's say there is no deal, and it's look, it's October the 31st. I told you we're out on October 31, so it's done. What trade relationships will Britain have left if it's not with the EU? Or is it? Or are they back to just cutting? Piecemeal deals with various nations at that point.
That would be the way to go. The UK would fall back onto World Trade Organization trading rules, but all of the deals that the UK currently has have obviously been negotiated through Brussels. So it wouldn't have any of the benefits of any of the deals that the UK has negotiated. So,
but this is part of why people wanted Brexit to begin with, right? The people who favor it have been saying, if we negotiate our own deals with individual countries on our own terms and their terms, we come to some kind of settlement, we're actually going to be better off doing it that way than having Brussels, filter everything. Was that an accurate statement I just made?
I guess one of the slogans for the Leave campaign was about, the big slogan was taking back control, and that involved everything from trade deals to immigration to small sort of minuscule laws that are imposed by government. So yeah, absolutely. That was one of the sort of major arguments that the UK would be able to negotiate better deals for itself as an independent trading body. And that remains to be seen, because the UK has been unable to carry out any real trading negotiations with anybody. I guess a lot of stuff's been done in the corridors and in, what's the phrase behind them? I can't remember it now off the top of my head, but a lot of meetings have probably taken place, but nothing official has been sort of set in stone because the UK is still part of the EU. So they can't really say anything, I guess going back to the game of chicken with the EU and everything, that there's still a strong feeling in Brussels as well as here in the UK that there may be a reversal of Brexit. So there's been talk this summer of the House of Commons cross-party agreements sort of coming together and people looking to come up with a majority that will say there's a vote of no confidence in the government. So they'd bring Boris Johnson down essentially by saying that the House of Commons has no confidence in the government, and then they'd try to install a sort of makeshift government. But whether or not that would actually work or not is up for debate. So this just adds to the uncertainty. So, you know, there's people talking about trade deals and being very positive, and then there's other people still talking about revoking Article 50 and leaving the UK. Article 50 being the mechanism by which the UK signaled to the EU. It's like a trigger that's saying we're leaving. So Theresa May triggered Article 50, which informed Brussels that the UK would be leaving the EU on whenever the original date was, March or whatever it was of this year, which obviously didn't happen. So they're talking about revoking that. But I don't know how realistic that is at the moment. It just goes to show that we still don't know what's going to happen at the moment.
Yeah. So one more question for you, having to do with Germany. Germany has now entered recession, is my understanding, and which is I know in the United States we say 2 years of two consecutive quarters, I think it is, of negative recession.
That's
right. And is that what's happened in Germany? And I mean, that's the economic engine of the European Union. So repercussions could be significant. What can you tell us about that?
Germany's had a pretty rough 2019. I don't know if it's official. It is yet in recession at the moment. There's definitely been one quarter of negative sentiment, absolutely. But this has been going on for a while. So I think manufacturing has been down in the auto industry. I think the Bundesbank this week said that Germany is likely to tip into recession. So they expect to have two quarters of negative growth confirmed. There's been massive problems in the auto industry. And then there's just been a slowdown of demand for cars. And that's a major, major part of the German economy. Loads of secondary and suppliers who work with the auto industry, and just the massive pressures that are coming to bear down on it have affected the German economy, essentially.
Isn't there also criticism that Germany's economy is too export driven? The government doesn't like to spend money. I mean, they're very fixated, unlike most countries. I mean, to Germany's credit, they've been very thrifty. They've been very fixated on making sure that they're not accumulating a lot of debt. But it's a time like this, when the economy starts to turn downward, that an awful lot of people have shown that, look, if you loosen the purse strings, you stimulate the economy when it needs to be stimulated, you can come out of this thing more quickly. The German government has not been that inclined to do that, though. So I've thrown a couple issues at you, one being an overly export-driven economy, the other one being that the government doesn't like the idea of debt spending, even in times when stimulus is really called for.
I think the problem is sort of there's still that shadow and the hangover from the sovereign debt crisis that kind of sort of spilled out after the after Lehman's and the great financial crisis, the global financial crisis. So so many European economies, the ECB and here in the UK sort of bailed out all of these bad banks, bad performing banks, sort of bailed them out, and then just shifted a lot of debt and a lot of pressure onto governments. I'm sure that shadow, that hangover, is still very much at the forefront of financial ministers and prime ministers across the continent. So there's definitely a worry there. And then the European Central Bank, the ECB has looked to cut interest rates further for countries in the eurozone who use the euro, but Mario Draghi, the president of the ECB, he's been quite adamant and sort of insisted that governments like the Germans, like Germany, should not rely on sort of monetary policy alone to sort of save their economy and save the Eurozone's economy. So I think I read this week actually in the Financial Times that the Germans are preparing to announce some sort of a stimulus package to try and stimulate investment in the economy, and that may be around sort of carbon emissions and looking to bring Germany up to speed in terms of fighting climate change and reducing its CO2 emissions. But I don't think anything's been sort of confirmed as yet. But you're right, there's sort of that reluctance to spend too much from government to they sort of rely on the private sector and businesses to drag themselves out of the mire. But yeah, it's looking like something may have to be done. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so it's a bad sign. Germany tipping into recession. The United States is getting some red flags that it's heading into recession. The economy in China has slowed, which you would expect to some degree because China's economy has gotten so big. It can't grow at 10% forever. Once an economy gets to a certain size, I mean, it would be unthinkable of the U.S. economy growing at 10%. And China's economy is getting to a size where, but nonetheless, there is a slowdown. It's pretty obvious that there's a slowdown going on that's not entirely having to do with just the immensity of the economy, but having to do with some structural issues. There's a lot of debt there. Mm. There's a tariff battle going on in the United States right now. So there's just been some bad signs. And then Brexit does not necessarily bode well for Great Britain. So if you take, you know, Britain, Germany, exactly China, the United States, some big economies that are all flashing red right now. So it'll be interesting next month when we get on the phone again, Merrick, to see how things play out. It'll probably take more than a month for this thing to start to resolve itself, but October 31 is not far off, and we'll find out just what Boris Johnson can do, or what the Eurozone, the European Union, is willing to do to try to make this thing work for all parties concerned.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Yeah.
Until next month, any parting words of wisdom, or do you have any Churchillian quotations you can leave us with? Not that it says dire as World War II, but
we're not really on a war footing as yet, I echo what you say, Mike. There's so many red lights flashing, headwinds all over the globe at the moment. Brexit's just come at the wrong time. It really has, and it doesn't bode well for real estate. Obviously, slowing economies mean less business and less credit being pumped into economies, and fewer people taking offices, and fewer tenants, and fewer people buying goods. And it's just not a good thing. I'm not quite sure how big this slowdown could be, but and you never really know until you sort of fall into it, do you? I'm quite bearish at the moment and negative, unfortunately, as summer comes to an end slowly. we head to fall and winter.
Well, I know that you will do what all good British residents do during downtime. So head to the pub and have yourself a few pints, and you'll feel better.
That's right.
We do the same thing here. So. It's just a different brew is all, and a different
that's right.
But we're into the pints these days too. So Merrick,
for those teetotalers, a nice cup of tea as well as a British way of dealing with stuff.
Of tea for the teetotalers. exactly, with a dash of milk and a little sugar, and we're good to go. So Merrick, hey, thanks again, and we'll talk next month.
Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
All right, cheers to you.
Care.